She's watching DVDs in Oakland, in Oakland. Now I'm driving up the 5 and she waits so I arrive in Oakland, in Oakland.
Everything that I wanted, only gotta drive for the moment. If you tell me turn around then I'm on it, for the moment. But you know me, you know how I get when I'm lonely. I think about you in the moments, but everything you do is so Oakland, so Oakland. Foot on the gas, I'm just trying to pass all the red lights and the stop signs. I'm ready to go before I get to the baby, that's a problem. Cause I'm way too scared to call and you might give me a stay night.
I don't really want to drive, but I think I'd probably die.
Welcome to the Eastern Shore. I'm Brock Winstead. Today on the show, coffee. I've had lots of it, and now we are going to talk about it. Yeah, coffee. Okay, but first a story. Last weekend, I was headed from my house to downtown Oakland. I was traveling down San Pablo Avenue, and this is a trip I've made, I don't know, hundreds of times. By car, by bus, by bike, even on foot. It is not one of your more hospitable walks, but it is instructive. So, anyway, headed down San Pablo, and out of the corner of my eye, I see something that I don't consciously remember ever having seen before. It's a sign for a business painted on the side of the building. The business is called Battery Specialists. You can imagine what they do. The sign on the side of the building there looks like it's hand-painted. The word battery is in big block capitals. You kind of can't help but make it out. But the word specialists is in cursive. And cursive being what it is, my brain in that moment when I first glanced the sign, my brain read the word not as specialist, but as socialist. And the thought that followed immediately wasn't, get out of here, that's ridiculous, that doesn't make any sense. It was, all right, Oakland, of course there's a place called Battery Socialist. It makes perfect sense that there would be such a place here. And then just as quickly, I realized what I was actually seeing, battery specialists. So, battery socialist isn't real, but I have held on to this idea that Oakland, or the Bay Area generally, this is a place where there could be something called battery socialist. At least for now, our part of the country remains not the only place, but one of the places, where people who want to build different approaches to business, to work, to life, tend to congregate. Where those people put their alternative models into practice. For this show, I talked to one of those people. My guest on the Eastern Shore this week is Keba Conte. He's the founder of Red Bay Coffee. That's a coffee roaster in Oakland. He's making a push right now to open a cafe. It's not his first. He co-founded Gorilla Cafe in Berkeley and Chasing Lions at City College in San Francisco. But with this cafe for Red Bay Coffee, he's trying something a little different. A cafe that returns its profits right back to its workers. And he's not just working on the what, but on the who. Trying to make specialty coffee a more inclusive industry. I'll let him tell you all about that. Here's Keba Conte on the Eastern Shore. Keba Conte, hello. I have never in my life been in anything called a coffee dojo.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the Red Bay Coffee Dojo?
The Coffee Dojo is basically a coffee training space. It is also now where we're doing some light production, bagging of our coffee labels and stamps. It is a place where we develop our coffee profiles and continue coffee education.
Why dojo?
I mean, I have a history of martial arts. And a dojo is where you go to train and to refine your skills and to test your skills and to condition and to work out and to work through these things. So it seemed to be a fitting proposition.
Is this where Red Bay Coffee got its start?
Maybe the real start was in the beginning of our coffee journey 10 years ago, starting Guerrilla Cafe in Berkeley. But Red Bay itself was definitely born right here in the Fruitvale district.
You were running cafes. You co-founded Guerrilla Cafe in Berkeley in 2006. And then you also launched, just a few years ago, another cafe at City College
yes.
in San Francisco. But you were perfectly happy to buy other people's coffee when you started.
Mm-hmm.
When did you decide that you also wanted to get into the coffee roasting business?
Well, it was probably maybe 4 years after Guerrilla Cafe. So probably, 2010, even before I opened Chasing Lions Cafe at San Francisco City College. Really, the vision I had for my second cafe would have been a roastery and cafe. The opportunity at City College came up. It was a small place that can accommodate a to-go coffee operation, but not really host a coffee roasting facility. So then I kind of put that off a little bit longer, continued my education, but that was my mission, even when I opened Chasing Lions.
So, okay, Red Bay Coffee began as your kind of foray into not just selling people a cup of coffee, but going from bean to cup and really figuring out how to make that process work. How did you learn to roast coffee at a level that you thought people are going to want to buy this?
I guess like anything that you start, you just begin whatever level you are and develop the craft.
So how'd you learn that craft?
Just being able to witness, first behind the scenes at some really local, some great local companies like Blue Bottle and Four Barrel in San Francisco. Then I met this Ethiopian woman. Her name is Mimi, and she taught me some basic, like the old school traditional Ethiopian style. And we traded. I helped teach her some espresso techniques. Then eventually she gave me, I bought a bunch of green coffee from her, came home, and I began to cook them over a fire in a wok, and that was okay. But then I thought maybe a cast iron skillet would be better. Then I tried that, and eventually I used a popcorn, little Whirly popcorn popper, manual one, and that really hit the spot. That was really nice. And just looked up a bunch of YouTube videos, did my own research. I was reading forums and blogs, and eventually I got some formal training. In Mill Valley, there's a coffee roasting school called Boot Coffee. And I was in no particular rush. It was just when I felt I had achieved the skill level or, developing a coffee that I thought I could share. That was the level for me. But there's a lot more to running a coffee company than just, quality coffee. There's a whole organization that has to accompany that production, customer service, account management, accounting and, marketing and branding. There's so much more to it. But for sure, it starts with building your craft to create a great cup of coffee.
You began developing your own craft of roasting coffee, trying to build another business around that or get up to the point where you felt like you could. You started just here at home. At some point, though, just quantity-wise, you can't do it at home anymore. So what was the jump for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, by the time I was actually producing for cafes, from the very beginning, basically what I did was I rented myself in to some local roasteries that would rent me some time on their equipment. It's not easy to do. A lot of coffee roasters don't want other people, especially beginners, messing around with their $100,000, equipment.
I just turned all the dials to maximum, is that right?
Right. And they might be incubating their next competition as well. So it's not really easy to get access, but through my network and some really great people, in the area, I found some sources and continued that for, probably the first year of our business, and really just sort of landed our own kind of roasting facility a few months ago. So
you've got a commercial scale roasting facility now.
Yes.
Where is that?
It is in the Laurel District, yeah, of East Oakland.
So not too far from the coffee.
Yeah, no, it's just, yeah, it's just, you know, 10 minutes up the block.
Yeah. Why is it called Red Bay Coffee?
Coffee, I like to remind people, is a fruit. Very often, the only way we see coffee here in the States is the roasted coffee bean. Before it's roasted, it's sort of a palish green gray color. And before that, it is a pit inside of a cherry. When it's ripe, it's just a beautiful and fragrant red fruit. And it's that color when it's at its peak of ripeness and its peak of flavor. So what we do is we pay an incentive, we pay extra for only the red coffee. So that really indicated, I wanted the name to indicate something about the product and the quality, which is red for coffee. And Bay, because we're here in the beautiful Bay Area, which is where I was born and raised.
Yeah, you were born in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up there.
Yeah.
And at some point made the move to Oakland. When did that happen?
That happened probably 20 years ago. Yeah. I've been in Oakland now. Huh. Yeah.
So Red Bay Coffee began as a roaster and supplying other cafes, including the cafes that you run. You are making a move now to open a Red Bay Coffee cafe.
Yes.
Why the move to open another cafe?
Well, that's a very good question, because once you've established and run two cafes, you know how intense they are to operate, to get going, and to manage. It is a lot of work and effort. So that's not something I was really anxious to do, except, you know, then I got an opportunity to participate and create a cafe in a really great location in Uptown Oakland, the Hive. But the reason I thought it was important to have a cafe of our own is like a little, you know, flagship shop that could really represent our quality, our best practices, our culture, and represent Red Bay how we want it represented, right? When you have a wholesale business, very often you're basically depending on your wholesale accounts to represent your quality and your way. So that's one of the reasons that we thought this is a really nice high-profile location, and it'd be a way for us to demonstrate, you know, how we do what we do.
So you were roasting coffee, building Red Bay for about 4 years before this opportunity to open a cafe came along.
Mm-hmm.
You've just outlined a lot of good reasons for a roaster to want to have a cafe as this expression of, here is what our product can and should be.
Yeah.
But you have some goals here beyond just roasting good coffee and selling it to people. You're trying to do a little more with Red Bay Coffee than just make coffee.
Yes.
Tell me about those other goals.
Yeah. Well, I've traveled a lot in my life to what we call the third world countries, whether it's Guatemala, Jamaica, yeah, East, West, and South Africa. And one thing I noticed, where people grow coffee, the very best, like the specialty coffee, the really sought at fantastic coffee, they're growing all this coffee, and it's in the supply chain from the exporter to the importer to the roaster to these specialty cafes. They really didn't reflect some of the personnel and the teams and companies. They didn't reflect what I saw at those farms where it started. So something that really came naturally for us when we established Guerrilla Cafe and even Chasing Lions was really to get people of color involved in that process, in the process of managing specialty coffee cafes and serving it and understanding the nuances and quality and, you know, and preparation and the technique and science behind it, and roasting as well. You know, so that's kind of what we had been doing with our cafes. This is a way for us to work back through the supply chain and participate in that level as well. So there is a social mission. What you'll find often in specialty coffee, which I, you know, really admire about, you know, many of my colleagues in this field, is that there's a real transparency to the supply chain, right? We know where the coffee came from, what very specific farm, what collective, what co-op, what family grew this coffee. And we also take pride in some of the work ethics practices that the trade practices, whether it's fair trade, direct trade, or rainforest certification, organic, and, you know, clean water certifications. So that was great. What I hadn't really seen was on the other side, on this side of it, right? People working at cafes, making minimum wage and trying to get by here in Oakland, very expensive city, you know, the whole Bay Area. So there are a lot of challenges for me recruiting and training people to become baristas. So something had to be done. I was like, well, how do we raise the wages, right? How do we transform low-wage jobs for people working on this side of it? And so that's kind of, you know, launched this latest initiative, which is a worker profit-sharing coffee bar.
One of the ways you're going about raising capital to open the profit-sharing coffee bar is a Kickstarter. You're running a Kickstarter right now. Why did you choose to go with that sort of crowdfunding approach?
Well, because of the mission and the business model that we're proposing, Red Bay, as a producer and wholesale company, you know, what we've done is we've agreed to provide our brand and our experience and our leadership to create this coffee bar. And we're also committed to turning over all of the profits to the workers to increase and give them a true livable wage.
So you probably can't just walk into a normal bank and get a standard business loan for that.
Well, maybe you could. I mean, it's hard enough to get a loan for anything.
Yeah.
But even if I could, that would be sort of a challenge. And, you know, it would be hard to give the profits to the workers if I'm having to take all of the risk. So I think what we're talking about doing here is something that there is a very strong sentiment here in Oakland. Actually, I think it's a national, you know, really the debate and discussion is a really hot topic right now. Issues of minimum wage, issues of income inequality, issues of gentrification. So these are all, you know, burning topics. So I want people to, you know, put their money where their mouth is. If they like this vision, they can help out. And so I think really a crowdfunding the capital to open this coffee bar is exactly what needs to happen, because the community puts in resources, the company meets and puts in resources, and we're able to provide livable wage jobs for people with high barriers to employment in this industry.
So we are having this national discussion. We are at this point right now where more people are pushing back against the low wages that jobs in the food service industry typically pay, really jobs in the service industry generally, not just food. And we've got campaigns to raise the minimum wage in many parts of the country, some of them successful, like here in Oakland. But I think part of what your work with Red Bay is saying is that's not enough. Red Bay seems like a step further, you know, turning the profits back around to the workers.
Yep.
Had you kind of experimented with that before launching into this Red Bay cafe?
Yes. Model? Yes, yes. Yeah, there, you mean, so this is what, you know, I would put under a broader umbrella of cooperative economics or solidarity economics. And some of the past examples of this were, one, at Guerrilla Cafe, where we would do pop-ups. So pop-ups became a, you know, big trend. I think we were really early on in that, in doing it in 2007 at Guerrilla Cafe, where we would extend an opportunity to our workers to be able to run a restaurant program that they could design in the evenings after the cafe was closed. We would really create a platform where they could just test their recipes, test their branding, their marketing, their concepts, right? A lot of people have dreams of running a cafe, but it takes a lot. And there's just such a high economic barrier to even test it out. And that's why there's just such a steep failure rate in restaurants in the food industry. So it was a way for, you know, us to help incubate places. And there's been at least three restaurants in the Bay Area who have since established their own restaurants and cafes.
So so three restaurants that you had kind of spun off from those efforts. What were those?
There's one is called Kingston 11. It's in Oakland, uptown. Another one called The Cook and Her Farmer. It's in Old Oakland. And there's a new Japanese place in San Francisco. And the name is escaping me at the moment. But so that's one example. More recently, at our campus at City College, Chasing Lions Cafe, we've sort of had an ongoing challenge there on how to manage the low season of the summer and the winter breaks, right, where most of the students are gone. Our cafe is on the street front, so it's accessible to the public. But with most of the students gone, you know, it's tough, right? So I made a proposition to the staff there that if they wanted to take over the cafe during those times, market to the local community and to their friends and, you know, to people who may be on campus, then they can have the place for free. They could, you know, use the various supplies in the place and the music and the, you know, rent is paid, insurance, utilities, and they would just, you know, attract customers and pay for, you know, the products and run the business and keep whatever they earned. So that was a way, you know, for them to keep a revenue, a salary during those down times, right? It's one thing for my own cash flow to stop, but it was also problematic to hold on to, you know, great folks if they don't have work for 3 or 4 weeks at a time, a couple times a year. So that was another example of some of the cooperative economics.
And so Red Bay is kind of an extension of that line of thinking that you've been working out.
So this one is more of a whole different business mind shift, where it's not going to be necessarily right for every business or every industry. But I think that there are a lot of companies that fit the profile of Red Bay Coffee, a brand, manufacturer, wholesale business primarily. There are bakeries, beer breweries, and other industries that fall into that category that they could also follow suit. So what I'm hoping to do is create a model here that once proved successful, that hopefully it could be as a vision for others to kind of tweak and to suit, you know, their own way, but just to be rethinking business models to create more equity for the working class. So really, this is a movement. You know, we're for sure on the cutting edge of a lot of things here in Oakland, and these models fit into our culture so well. We have a very powerful do-it-yourself spirit. We have, you know, a lot of very entrenched social justice movement here, history here in Oakland. So it's a perfect place to launch this particular one, but really, this is an international movement. I spoke maybe a couple months ago at a forum in San Jose, the Global Innovators Forum. Just gave a 3-minute pitch for what I'm proposing. We were actually also in the lobby catering the coffee, so I was out hanging there. And people from all over the country and all over the world, from Hong Kong to Nigeria to Michigan, all came to me really excited about either bringing Red Bay, this particular model, to their town, or wanting to have me consult with them, with their mayor or with some of their local leaders to see how we could form different businesses there, you know, with some of the ideas and brainstorming that we've been doing.
Part of what you're doing with Red Bay is it's not just about the what, the model of it, but about the who as well.
Mm-hmm.
The specialty coffee business, it has a reputation for being, you know, guys like me, kind of bearded hipster doofus folks.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to set up a business with Red Bay that very explicitly broadens who's taking part in that industry and who's benefiting from it here in the U.S. And you talked about how especially coffee shops all over the country, often we know a lot about where the coffee came from.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a picture of the farmer who grew it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this sense that maybe, or there's at least this implication in that when you buy your relatively expensive cup of coffee, you are in some way doing something for this person elsewhere, this person of color elsewhere. You're trying to remind people that that coffee industry doesn't just live on farms in Guatemala or wherever, but it lives right here in our communities.
That's right.
Are there other people who are attempting to have that same conversation here in the Bay Area?
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, and but yeah, no, there are for sure. I mean, I'm seeing it more and more, and I'll see. Yeah, there are some retail operations that I could tell when I go in that you know sometimes it's going to be some black and brown folks just because, but some operations you could see that they are intentional. They're intentional about it. Yeah. So I definitely want to. Pay respect where respect is due. And also just want to point out that by bringing in more folks into the business of specialty coffee is going to broaden the market for specialty coffee. Because when you create a specialty coffee shop that where just the whole culture, the space, the music, the vibe is not so welcoming, the customer service, the attitude, is not that welcoming to more of a diverse crowd, people are just not going to even get it and tap into it. Then they'll just go back to Pete's and Starbucks or, or whatever kind of generic coffee is out there. So I think this is, the work that we're doing is going to really benefit the industry in whole.
You mentioned gentrification earlier, another conversation, sort of like the minimum wage that a lot of people, especially in the Bay Area, are in some way having right now. Specialty coffee shops, cafes, are sometimes these kind of outposts of gentrification. How do we make that not the case? I mean, you're trying to build something with Red Bay that is essentially going into a neighborhood that is changing but has already changed a lot in Uptown.
Yeah.
And you are explicitly trying to set up the business in a way that is as non-exploitative as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to, in some other neighborhood, somewhere in Oakland, to introduce specialty coffee, like a cafe, it's like you're trying to set up the Red Bay, that is not in some way a gentrification outpost?
Well, gentrification happens.
Hmm.
These outposts...
We'll end the interview right there.
Yeah, yeah. The outposts can be the spearhead. But, it's obviously it's not coffee. Coffee is not the problem. It is kind of very often what these places represent and what these businesses represent and how they bring themselves to communities. So, I'm not going to tell anyone how to run their business because it's a lot of work to open a shop anywhere, especially in the hood somewhere. So, and it takes resources and money and there's risk involved. So, people need to do whatever's, best for their business. And I respect that. My advice would be if they were asking me is to, it seems pretty obvious, but hire some people in your neighborhood, train them. Yeah. It's easier to find someone who's already trained, but a little bit of investment, very often, we try to sort of aggrandize ourselves in this coffee thing, but it's not that deep. It's not that complicated. Food is a beautiful thing and that it takes caring and it takes some sensitivity around, what you're doing. But, these things could be trained. But yeah, so gentrification is coming, and how do we do it? Do we sort of get knocked over by a wave? Or do we hold hands and create a raft, or a surfboard for that matter, and sort of and ride it and kind of survive and stand our ground? So that's the position I'm taking, right? So we're gonna unite, we're gonna establish businesses, we're going to work cooperatively with ourselves and our allies. And, create opportunities for each other. And we're going to stay and make the best of these neighborhoods and reap the benefits of, improving schools and improving streets and lights and security and the rest of the positives that come with the gentrification.
You have been involved in activism and politics for some time. Now you are using your work in coffee mm-hmm. and food as an expression of that.
Sure.
What form did your kind of political activity or activism take
yeah.
before the cafes came
Well,
out?
You mean I was born in 1966 in the Haight-Ashbury. I grew up, went to middle school, you know, at a school called San Francisco Community School. I went to high school in San Francisco. I went to San Francisco State University, which was in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. And that was a very radical campus with a long radical history. So I was sort of politicized there, even though, you know, my mom in our house, you know, we grew up with a social conscience and had some, you know, very lively conversations on a regular. But yeah, so then I learned in college that to be effective, you have to organize. You have to be part of an organization. So I was part of different political organizations on campus, in the community. And there's no shortage of causes from, you know, at the time, you know, Rodney King, the war in Iraq. Yeah, and there's plenty of others. So that's kind of where I cut my teeth in political activism. The thing that really inspired me so about those times and those movements and the people that I met there were these people were volunteering and they were working their asses off. And I mean, there were people from all over the world, from South Africa to Palestine, from the East Coast and the South. I mean, so I just met a lot of really brilliant strategists, people who cared deeply and, you know, who were really building community and trying to make the world a better place. And they weren't getting paid to do it. And they took made a lot of sacrifices to their health, to their, you know, security, to their sanity, their mind. You know, a lot of people paid a lot of serious prices for that. And we learned about a long history of people making these sacrifices. And, you know, so that's the background of it. Then I got into, you know, became an artist, a photojournalist. I studied photojournalism. So I traveled and photographed Nelson Mandela winning the election in 1994 in South Africa. In 1995, I was in Washington, D.C. for the Million Man March. I photographed those and published, you know, long photo essays on those in magazines. You know, I photographed movements in San Francisco, trying to kind of tell, you know, the story and document history that didn't make it to the front page. And
that was your life, that was your career for some time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you go from working as a photojournalist and photographer to even your first food business?
Yeah.
How'd that transition happen?
Well, I've made a lot of transitions and pivots and blending things in my life, but they all kind of make sense in the big scheme of things, and they've all really informed every new venture. So photojournalism, I'm out, I'm traveling, you know, I'm making photographs. That's art, that's fine art. Along that path, I really got inspired by artists like Robert Rausch, a lot of artists. And so I began doing mixed media, right? Photographing stuff, building, transferring my photographs on wood, kind of building these montages and mixed media, multi-layered pieces of artwork that spoke a little more deeply to the images that I was creating. So that really hit a chord for a lot of people. And so I had a long run as a visual artist doing that kind of work. Then at Guerrilla Cafe, when we had the opportunity to open that, my intention was really to have that serve as a platform for my art. It was in North Berkeley in a very upscale neighborhood, dubbed the Gourmet Ghetto. So that was my mission. Like, wow, this would be a great place just to have a gallery. The place was already a legendary cafe called Smokey Joe's Cafe. It had been around for 33 years. You know, really, we were taking that over. Of course, we just completely stripped the place down to the studs and redesigned it and rebranded it. But that's still kind of the spirit behind it. So we figured, you know, we'd have a little coffee shop, but really it was going to be about the artwork for me. And it became so much more.
Yeah.
The coffee, yeah.
Are you still doing any photography?
All the time, yeah. Photography is something I do, you know, all the time. So, and it takes, you know, different forms, right? So just day to day, especially with the ease of digital photography and, you know, and high-end iPhones, which are just making, you know, phenomenal quality pictures. So I'm still able to just be taken in a moment with a particular moment composition. I'll more intentionally, you know, I'll photograph things around Red Bay Coffee and coffee things, and we're building beautiful things, creating beautiful environments. Yeah, so there's always something to photograph there. My wife has a shop in downtown Oakland, a design shop. It's called Owl and Wood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's on Grand Avenue, just above Broadway.
Yeah.
So I'll photograph. I'll do her kind of fashion photographs for her. She styles, and anyway, we have a lot of fun there. Make beautiful images there. And I have a exhibition planned for September at the Hub, Impact Hub Oakland, at their gallery, OMI Gallery, O-M-I. Still trying to decide what I'm going to do there. I'd like to, since I'm so focused on coffee, I'll probably take some of the photographs I made on my most recent trip to Ethiopia this past October and do some altars and photographs on wood, you know, just create a whole sort of installation around what is inspiring me so much around this coffee thing, right? This coffee is a $100 billion industry. It's the number one commodity above oil on the planet. There's so much room for opportunity and just for, you know, so many people to get involved on so many different levels, from journalism to coffee roasting and preparing and sourcing and equipment and technology and education, and there's just so much that we could do. So I think I would try to reflect that in that exhibition and tell some of the stories that we're doing.
Speaking of photographs and a lot of the material that you produced around Red Bay Coffee, there's a photograph I've seen a bunch, black and white photograph of an older man. Who is that?
That's George Washington Carver. Yeah, George Washington Carver is a hero of mine. He was a very brilliant man who spoke to plants, and plants spoke to him. He listened. He has a quote of mine that's written down and mounted on our altar downstairs in the dojo. And it basically says that if you love something enough, it will reveal its secrets. So that's something I take to heart, and I try to keep with me when I'm working with coffee, because coffee is one of these things that is, in one sense, is very simple. It grows as a cherry. They dry out this pit. We roast it till it's brown. We crush it, add it with water, and serve it. But it's, you know, also so complex, and can be done a million different ways and nuanced infinitely. So I'm always trying to pay attention and not lose focus on the beauty that coffee has to offer, and trying to bring out just, you know, just the deliciousness and the flavors and all the things that, you know, coffee can reveal.
You're treating it like an art practice in some ways.
Why not?
So back to the thing that's probably obsessing you most right now, the Kickstarter. I'm talking to you on Friday. You've got less than a week left.
Yeah, 6 days.
This will run probably Monday.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you don't hit your target?
What happens if we don't hit the target? Then we don't hit the target. But that's just not going to happen. We've just got, you know, too much love and momentum behind us. There are people who really care. They're going to dig in deep and support and get the word out. You know, just since we hit the last 7 days, you can just real feel people, you know, they've been paying attention, but they're just, I don't know, waiting till the end, or, you know, so, you know, failure is not an option. We've just got people who are waiting to be called. You know, we're going to have our phone banking sessions on Monday and Wednesday and up to the last minute. So I really don't see us, you know, failing. But in reality, anything could happen. And you know, we'll find a way. We'll relaunch. We'll do something else. I don't know. But I try not to focus too much on the plan B because it sort of softens up my intensity on the drive of plan A. So plan A is we're going to succeed. So it's just about how. And really, I'm not so concerned about not winning our Kickstarter. It's just sort of how we win. And what I mean by that is the more people who back our campaign, the more successful we are. I mean, we literally have, you know, people who log in and donate $1. And just the process, they don't make it that easy to kind of do it. But the process of it, you know, for people to go through those changes, and it's just a vote of confidence. And it's, you know, signaling to the rest of the world that they believe in our direction and what we're doing. And that's really part of what we're doing, right? So this is a business model. So part of the model is the community participating. You can participate how at whatever level you can. It's really how we're going to do it is what's important here.
I want to go back to one thing that you said earlier. The cafe you're working on opening now for Red Bay, you know, is going to be a part of the Hive.
Yes.
What makes that special?
Well, we are subletting from a really fantastic business called Impact Hub Oakland. Impact Hub Oakland is a co-working space, you know, filled with really inspired entrepreneurs, nonprofits, you know, just innovative thinkers, people coming together doing workshops and, you know, speaking engagements and art exhibitions. And even the way it's built is very open, and glass offices and very transparent, and it's a very ripe environment to collaborate and network. So it's really from the energy from there that we'll be subletting from them just out in the plaza of the larger project, which is a entire city block called The Hive. Now, The Hive is a whole block of really cool and innovative businesses, including The Hub, Numi's Tea, Drake's Beer Garden, Trove Workout, you know, Fitness. There's going to be housing in the back. There's a barbershop. I mean, this is like one very intentional community of things that are just right in the heart of Oakland, right there in the Uptown District. So, you know, it's just such a great place, and it's probably why it gives me the confidence that we could share the profits of the workers, and they're going to be enough profits to really make a difference. So yeah, that's the location, that's the setting. But the physical coffee bar itself will actually be made from a shipping container that has been, you know, completely modified, where the sides sort of swing up and form the profile of the Oakland crane. So it's, you know, really a beautiful design that was done for us by an international design firm called Gensler, who just recently moved in the neighborhood. So that was sort of a welcoming gift to us.
What is the timeline, you know, from here to opening cafe? When will the sides of that container fly open for the first
time? So we're looking, you know, for the final container piece to come in probably October, November, before the end of the year. Once we hit our Kickstarter goal and get that first round of money, we'll begin construction. So we've got our design. We're still interviewing the builders. But what we'll do in the meantime, though, is we're going to create a smaller mobile trailer that we'll have there, and that will be in there this summer. And that will be there until the final container comes in. And then that more mobile trailer will kind of hit the road doing, you know, events and farmers markets and concerts all around the, you know, area.
Well, Cable Conte, you make a mean cup of coffee.
All right, thank you.
I look forward to having another one at your permanently installed cafe at The Hive once that's up and running. Good luck with the Kickstarter here in the home stretch, and thank you for talking with me.
Thank you, Brock, for coming on out to our home in the Fruitvale to record this. And yeah, it was a pleasure speaking with you too.
I can now check Visit Coffee Dojo off of my list.
Yes.
You can find Que Bocante's Kickstarter for the Red Bay Coffee Shop at mybagofbeautiful.com. Yeah, I'm going to say that again. It's mybagofbeautiful.com. He's got a great video there. There's a link, of course, to the Kickstarter page itself. There's a lot more info about what he's trying to do. Check it out. That's mybagofbeautiful.com. You can find more information about this show at tespodcast.com. That's where you can find all the previous interviews I've done, a little more info about all the people I've talked to, and ways to subscribe to the show, iTunes, Stitcher, or the feed right there at tespodcast.com. This has been the Eastern Shore. I have been and continue to be Brock Winstead with a cold. Thank you for listening. We will do it again next week.
Way down among Brazilian coffee beans grow by the billions, so they gotta find those extra cups to fill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. You can't get cherry soda, 'cause they got to fill that quota, and the way things are, they'll better never will. They've got a zillion tons of coffee in Brazil.
No tea.
No tea, nor tomato juice, you'll see. No potato juice, 'cause the planners down in San Jose say no, no, no.
The politician's daughter was accused to drinking water and was fined a great big $50 bill. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
You date a girl and find out later she smells like a percolator. Her perfume was made right on the grill. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
And when their ham and eggs need savor, coffee ketchup gives them flavor.
Coffee pickles
way outsell the dill.
They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
No tea, nor tomato juice, you'll see. No potato juice, 'cause the planters down in San Jose all say no, no, no.
So you'll add to the local color, serving coffee with a cruller. Dunking doesn't take a lot of skill. Man, they put coffee in the coffee in Brazil. Yeah, they got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. They have an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. And they've got a gang of coffee in Brazil.
Could break somebody's heart just doing the latest dance.
just kissing in cars, kissing in cafes. And they were walking down Main Street, kisses like bright flags, hung on holidays. In fancy kiss on Main Street, amour, mama, not cheap display. And we were rolling, rolling, rocking.
You're listening to the Eastern Shore here on BFF.FM, best frequencies forever. And at the end of that interview I just did with Cable Conte, I told you about the Kickstarter he's running to help fund his new Red Bay coffee shop at the Hive in Oakland. And maybe coffee is your thing. Maybe you ran out and pledged to that Kickstarter, and that's great. But maybe coffee, or at least coffee Kickstarter, isn't your thing. Maybe radio is, and maybe specifically BFF.FM is your thing. In fact, if you are hearing me say these words right now, there's a good chance that you are a diehard BFF.FM listener, and our little independent community-supported online radio station could use your support, community. Here's the thing, we are bursting at the seams here in our little studio in the Mission, and we need your help to build out a second studio. So if you head to bff.fm/Kickstarter right now, you can help us do that. Your pledge supports more shows, more events like live performances, more fun, even better frequencies forever. BFF.FM is all about connecting you with what's great about the Bay Area. Great music, great stories, great people. And we can do a lot more, but not without your help. So, pledge now at BFF.FM/Kickstarter. Thank you. Now stay tuned here on BFF.FM for San Francisco People, with Frank Garza, coming up at 3. In the meantime, here's some more Keith Jarrett. Don't forget, BFF.FM/Kickstarter for even better frequencies forever. Thank you.
Why, what's this? It looks like I have about one more minute left, which means I get to tell you again about the Kickstarter. Yeah, I'm not letting this go. It's happening. Head to bff.fm/Kickstarter. You should check out some of the rewards there. There's really good stuff. You could be a co-host on your favorite BFF.fm show. You can get special things made for you that don't exist anywhere else. You could also get the entire studio named after you for the low, low cost of $5,000. BFF.fm/Kickstarter. One more time. BFF.fm/Kickstarter. Go to it. Okay, San Francisco people, it's now time for San Francisco people here on BFF.fm. Best frequencies forever.
It's crazy.
And suddenly you were living in a world where everything was calibrated to that thumb.
Totally different world. Totally different world. I mean, it was sort of shocking, to be honest. And it was the first time that I felt like if I wrote the thing I wanted to
write. I'm Sarah Cooper, and today you'll hear my story on San Francisco people.